Welcome back to Down the Rabbit Hole. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jake.
Today is not our usual publishing day, and this topic was not on our schedule. But the events in Washington, D.C. yesterday were not typical, and they prompt serious discussion. We're not going to review the lead-up protests or the physical breach of the U.S. Capitol. We're not going to comment on the hyper-polarization in the political parties. As you know...
We probably should, though. But we're not going
to. We try our hardest to stay central and nonpartisan, right? Away from the domestics. But watching these events and seeing the news coverage abroad, we have to ask, what are the implications on U.S. foreign policy? While these events, tragic as they might be for our domestic stability, have pretty serious ripple effects in how the U.S. is able to conduct itself abroad. Now, I have to admit, I called Jake and forced him onto this episode out of the blue, so sorry not sorry. I have some questions and quotes written on my notepad, but otherwise, like, everything's completely unscripted.
Yeah, I got the triple text this morning, you know, we got to do something about this, so here we are.
Okay, so to preface the first question, I'm going to read you some statements, and there's like nine, maybe eight, so just take it. All right, so the first one. This morning, the Speaker of the Russian Duma said, "It's time to reevaluate the vision of democracy that the U.S. exports around the world. Those who love to point to the U.S. as an example will need to rethink their views." Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said that, quote, "What happened in the U.S. shows how fragile Western democracy is. Despite all their scientific and industrial achievements, we see a huge influence of populism." He went on to say that Trump also creates troubles for the world. Israeli President Benjamin Netanyahu said the events were disgraceful. President Erdogan of Turkey said that Americans needed to resist the pull of violence. Venezuela, of all nations, put out a statement that said Venezuela is troubled by the violence in U.S. politics. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said that Canada was disturbed by the blatant attack on democracy. And diplomats from Iceland, Poland, Ecuador, Colombia, just to name a few of the list of nations there, reminded the U.S. of its, quote, role as a model of democracy in the world.
So, can we pause here for a second?
Oh, go ahead.
I'm just going to run through the gamut here quickly, okay? The Speaker of the Russian Duma, just to stop it. Iranian President Rouhani, you are a rogue state. Stop it. Netanyahu, I didn't know you had the word disgraceful in your vocabulary, and if you did, you should use it on yourself more often. President Erdogan of Turkey resisting the pull of violence. That is an intriguing statement. Venezuelan foreign minister who claims that his country is troubled by the violence in the U.S. The world is troubled by your country. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, we accept your criticism. The same can be said for diplomats from Iceland, Poland, and the majority of other areas across the world. Sorry, I just had to get that off my chest.
Okay. Honestly, that was pretty funny. I didn't expect that response. However, you say these things and it really brings me to my question. It sets it up pretty well. The U.S. is the primary underwriter of the international system, you know, the international liberal order. But we just suffered events in our own nation that we condemn other countries for. So to get to the actual question, is this an inflection point in the liberal international order?
I don't know. I mean, maybe, right? Like, I think this could eventually go down as the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, let's face it, the international liberal order is not really in a good place right now in general. 4 years of the Trump presidency definitely hasn't helped that. Tensions in the EU with, you know, leaders coming and going. I'm thinking of Merkel leaving office soon. I don't know if Macron is going to step up and be a leader of European politics. The issue with the UK and Brexit, obviously, is negatively affecting the international order. So while the U.S. leads it, I would say that the followers, you know, aren't really up to par as well. So this doesn't help, that's for sure. I just don't know if it's the inflection point for the downturn of the liberal international order, but it's definitely building the case.
So you're kind of saying this isn't like on a roller coaster when you're like climbing the first slope. This isn't the point that the riders like tip over and they're looking down.
If we're gonna pitfall, we got to go up a little bit more first. That's my opinion.
Or are you saying that this is? Oh, okay. So you're saying this is just building the case and building the case.
Yeah, we're still on the way up. We're still on the way up.
I mean, that's kind of pessimistic. But
shocking.
It kind of flows into my second question. What happens to U.S. grand strategy now?
So I think this is where we're going to split our opinion here, because I kind of already know how you feel about this.
Okay.
But my opinion is that This doubles down Biden's approach to seeking out a international liberalist version of primacy in terms of his strategy in the next 4 years. You know, we already had the inkling that that was going to be his approach, but with just another talking point to add to the reasons of why the U.S. needs to reconnect with the international liberal order and present such a strong stance after coming off this very, very low point, I think it just builds his case more that, you know, I'm President Joe Biden and I'm going to lead the U.S. back to its former glory while empowering our allies and reshaping some of our relations around the globe.
So you were correct in that we're going to differ here. I think that this putting the Trump presidency as a 4 year block of time, not this specific incident, however, this specific incident is kind of just the cherry on top. It makes me think that the Biden administration would need to pull back a little bit away from this this purely primacist liberal internationalism to kind of reassess interests, reassess U.S. lines of effort abroad, kind of reshape the American image to not be as imperial, some other place of the world would call it imperial.
I don't want to dive too much into leadership theory, but I'm also not directing this criticism at you, more so to the general statement that you made. But I think we need to think about who Joe Biden is a little bit more. I mean, he comes off as this soft-spoken, clumsy, forgetful old man, but you know, he's been around the block for a while. He sat in the number two chair for a while, and now it's his time to shine. And I don't think the pullback approach is one that suits him. I mean, this is the guy that claims in his own biography he stared into Putin's eyes and told him he doesn't have a soul. I don't think that we're going to see this pullback from the Biden administration. That obviously depends heavily on the people he surrounds himself with as well. But that just doesn't seem on the cards for me. But I take your point about why it would be worthwhile effort, that is.
So then flipping it to the opposite side, right? This is a propaganda moment for the nation's adversaries. For anyone who really wants to take a dig at the U.S., this is a prime moment for doctored pictures and propaganda, right?
Yeah, can we just talk about some of the pictures while we're
okay,
here?
Okay, sure.
I mean, the one of the protesters, or some may call them terrorists, scaling the Capitol building like with makeshift ladders. I mean, that was amazing in terms of its the gravity of the situation, not amazing in the positive connotation.
I think – so I would definitely – I can't even call the people that breached the Capitol protesters. Like it's more than a protest, and that's my opinion. However, yes, the pictures – and they're undoctored. And that, I guess – I said doctored before, but the undoctored pictures really give so many people a way to criticize the U.S. So how are nations going to use that against the U.S.? Like how are Russia and China and Iran's grand strategies going to change with this in mind?
So I think that these pictures, when they've been used by the United States, for example, the one that props to mind is the pictures of the Arab Spring and some of the violence that was taking place when leaders like Gaddafi were being removed. Now, on one hand, we have people celebrating the fact that there are young men and women protesting in the streets against their radical governments. But on the other hand, you have the more hawkish people who use them as an excuse to get involved in a situation. However, those pictures are often used to mobilize, motivate, or improve the interest of the public. You know what I mean? Like they're inward facing. The U.S. shows those pictures on the news and their own citizens have an opinion about it. I don't know how much it does on the international scene. Now, I think that that could mobilize maybe some Russian population or the Chinese population or the Iranian or the North Korean population to have an even more negative opinion on the U.S. than they do now. I just don't know what they do in shaping the outward opinion of the United States. But inward, I can see what you're getting at.
Do these events actually make partners or potential partners more skeptical to work with the U.S.? The U.S. is supposed to have this promise of openness, democracy, freedom, open markets, but these events that we chastise happening in other parts of the world, now happening on our own grounds, could it give China and Russia, Iran, leverage to pull some of the states away from American influence?
I don't know. I mean, if it wasn't connected to Trump, then probably yes. And that answer is kind of a cop-out, but no, because it's so Trumpian in nature. Like that hopefully that time frame in American history is done and gone, right? Like, I don't know what 2024 is going to bring. But if this was a blip on the radar, then I don't know how much of an impact it has in the medium to long term. But short term, I mean, no one's going to screw up their alliance or gravitate towards another country because of a couple idiot terrorists on the Capitol building stealing the monument that the Speaker of the House bangs the gavel on. You know what I mean? That's my opinion anyways.
Okay. I'm not going to say it's wrong. Obviously, we can't tell anybody that their opinions here are wrong, especially when we're the only
people
here. But I have one more question, and it's like a security-minded question, which does have implications for U.S. national security. Now, there were a significant amount of unauthorized people in the Capitol yesterday, and that is probably the lightest way to put that statement. We saw pictures of staffers evacuating so quickly that they left their computers open, emails still up on screens, of hard copy files unsecured. That's a potentially serious information leak, right?
Yes. I mean, we were talking about some of the crazy pictures we saw earlier. The one of the guy sitting in a senator or representative's chair on their computer was, like, mind-numbingly scary.
That was Speaker Pelosi's desk.
Excellent. Yeah, that just, you know, she probably doesn't have anything important on there. But to your point, I mean, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, but I'm just going to say it. If I was a foreign asset tasked to be working in Washington, D.C., or in, I guess, really the greater United States, I know where I would have been yesterday.
Now, this morning, I was discussing this with my now wife, and she asked me, would a foreign intelligence officer monitor Facebook group chats or Facebook groups, monitor protest coordination, and show up with this garb on? And I said, absolutely. The U.S. has done it before in other nations. So
I mean, the guy in the bear suit is probably most likely to be a foreign asset.
Actually, I don't think that a foreign asset would be that noticeable. But we do sound conspiratorial, like, oh my God, the Chinese have an insider. But think about it. If these offices were evacuated so quickly and computers weren't even locked, who could have plugged a USB into a computer? Who could have?
Could have just taken the whole computer. It was just sitting there. They could have just walked out of the computer.
That, I mean, if somebody picked up a podium that the speaker like pounced the gavel on and left with it, I guess anything's open, right?
Yeah, but, yeah, and I know we're at the point where we're kind of making light of the situation, and that doesn't really take away from the gravity of, you know, either the loss of life that was experienced yesterday or the failings of democracy that it really demonstrates and the problem that we have in this country. But how do we wrap up this from a foreign policy perspective or from an international perspective? Like, what's the takeaway from what happened yesterday?
I think the takeaway, looking internationally, right, we're not going to talk about the domestic applications. And I just want to make that clear. The takeaway from yesterday is that, in my opinion, the U.S. needs to reorient how it approaches its international affairs, its foreign policy, so that it can rationalize what happened yesterday in order to retain its place in the world and retain its influence in the international system.
Yeah, to me, it's more of a backs up against the wall type approach where, okay, everyone's laughing at us. We need to do something to make sure they're no longer laughing at us. And I also think that President-elect Biden is going to be faced with a very hard task of fixing this divide and rift that exists in the country right now. And that may or may not lead him to look outward for other areas of success. You know, if things aren't going so well at home, if he can add some check pluses to his grade tally on the international scene, he might be driven towards pursuing more aggressive or, you know, and more involved processes in that domain because then it might be easier. That's just a theory. But I think this is going to have an effect on international politics and the bigger geopolitical sphere than we think it is in the moment.
To finish, I'm just going to say one last thing. The president is technically supposed to be a foreign-facing office position. So I think that the way to address what happened yesterday, what's been building up over the last 4 years, actually doesn't rest with the president. It rests with local governments. It rests with congressmen and senators because they're the ones addressing the domestic scene. Now, anybody can disagree with me. Anybody can disagree with Jake, and we welcome it, but we're going to wrap up this conversation. You can email us if you, I don't know, if you want to yell at us or you want to say you agree or disagree, you can email us at downtrh.pod@gmail.com.
Yeah, put the criticisms in the email. Keep those off Twitter so we can keep our brand.
You can find us on Twitter at DownTRH.
And our Instagram handle with a bunch of periods in the middle, Down the Rabbit Hole Podcast.
But we will see you on our regular publishing day next week. So until then, catch us on social media.